Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/truetransparencypricing. Happy you'll be if the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Doug Matthews is with us as we go on the road with him every Wednesday. Presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, who reminds you, booze it and lose it. Lose your license, your freedom, your life. The Tennessee Highway Safety Office, helping you arrive. Coach, how are you?
Doing well. Thank you very much.
How badly did Tennessee need that victory against Mississippi State? Just from the psyche of keeping postseason hopes alive, as glim as they might look, that you can discuss that in Knoxville today. And a big game coming up against Alabama, but on the horizon, South Carolina and others.
Well, it was a huge win. It's hard to call Mississippi State a huge win, a team that's about like you are, quite honestly, but it was a huge win. And I don't think probably they're looking at it as getting, you know, closer to a bowl game. I don't know that that was the goal. Normally, that's not a stated goal.
Right.
It is one that you're certainly very, very aware of for a lot of reasons, but they needed to win a ball game just get a win some way. And I think the way that they won it was even more importantly for this team, because it was a very solid victory that really all three phases of the team that we talk about, kicking, offense, defense, all played at a winning level, and they were able to win a game.
Well, and to win the game on offense with a 91-yard drive, where they couldn't do that against BYU, very similar circumstances that BYU game, how big is that for an offense that didn't do a ton throughout the day to get that drive that capped it off?
Well, you need something, one side of the ball, to make a play in the fourth quarter. I mentioned Sunday on Big Horn Sunday. I was glad it ended the way it ended from the standpoint. If Tennessee doesn't have the two turnovers in the end zone, if they just get field goals out of that, it's probably a pretty comfortable win in the fourth quarter. But there's nothing like coming and having to win a game in the fourth quarter. And as you all have heard me talk so many times, if you go back and look, most, when you get about halfway through the season and you have only conference games remaining, most of those go into the fourth quarter with a chance to win. Not all of them, but most do. And it's necessary. You either have to make a play on defense or you have to make a play on offense. And that drive, very reminiscent, I know, to many, many Tennessee fans. That's Tennessee offensively, what Tennessee was kind of noted for about a 15-20-year period, you know, late Majors years and Coach Fulmer's years, of taking the ball and eating up the clock and either going ahead with a score or, in this instance, putting you up where the game's out of reach. And that was it was huge, and you can really build off that. Nothing like that than taking a drive. Long 60-yard touchdown passes are great, but being able to take the ball and drive it and keep driving it and keep it and then finally score a touchdown, that is such a confidence builder. It really is.
What did you think of Brian Maurer in his second start? What are you talk about the teaching points, the lessons that you would write down as a coach. What are some of the lessons for Brian Maurer in this game?
Well, I think I'll just speak for myself. I really like the way he played, the way he looked. They've got to make mistakes, absolutely. Playing against a good defense, not a great defense, but a good defense. I thought he made good, decisive decisions. They didn't throw the ball an awful lot, obviously. Had two picks there. But the good thing about those picks are, if there is something good, they happened at the other end of the field, so you didn't give up field position that was going to cost you points from the other team. You probably cost yourself points. But both of those are things that can be worked on and can be coached on the practice field. That first pass, the first interception that he threw down on the goal line, is a perfect example. It looked like they were playing man, but they shifted to zone. They had a high-low. Tennessee had a high-low guy in the back of the end zone, one on about the 5-yard line, so he had about a 15-yard difference. So if they were playing zone, whichever that underneath guy, if he went was favoring a little deep, you threw it short. If he was favoring deep or short, you threw it long. Well, Maurer thought it was man coverage, looked like man coverage. It was zone, and, of course, that underneath guy went back underneath and intercepted. But that can be worked on. you know, that could be, okay, let's look at this. And the next time he does that, I'm sure, if he throws the ball to the underneath route, which is what the read would tell him to do normally, it's going to be probably a completion and maybe down to the 1 or 2 yard line. The other one was just trying to make a play. But again, those are two things that those two interceptions can really be coached. That's coaching. But overall, you know, I think you have to be encouraged. He's not a Heath Shuler type runner, but he's certainly a mobile runner. I'm sure he has been talked to and will learn. He's going to have to get on the ground for a couple of reasons, not just, you know, you don't ever want to coach intensity out of a player and aggressiveness, but hey, we got one quarterback right now. That's what he's got to look at. And for sure, don't try to jump over somebody. You might be able to run over some of them. You ain't going to be able to jump over many of them. And I'm sure he'll learn that. So first game, and he's going in now to a place that is as tough as any place he'll ever play in, against a team as good as anybody he'll ever play in. So it'll be another building block for him. But overall, Chad, I think you have to be encouraged by the way he played.
We talked about Brian Maurer. This was a big game for some guys who were recruited by a previous coaching staff that are upperclassmen to have a big day. Daryl Taylor had his first really big game of the year. Garantano did exactly what was asked of him in the second half. He wasn't asked to do much, but he did it, and he did it well. And Tyler Byrd with the game-sealing touchdown catch and run. Coach, is that what you want to see from guys that have been through a lot of negative times to stick with it and have a day like that?
Well, here's the thing that it points out. You know, all this talk about, and most of it, you know, just talk about, you know, losing a team, players not wanting to play, fighting on the sideline. I don't know where all that stuff comes from. I mean, very few times, even in wins, do you not have somebody upset on the sideline, either a coach or a player or a combination of both. But that's one of the, I thought, neat things and things that showed me a little something coming out of this game, Chad. Daryl Taylor, Juwan Jennings, Nigel Warrior, Daniel Batuli, Dom Wood Anderson, Brian Kennedy, and Tyler Byrd. Those are seniors. Those are guys that, they're not playing for anything right now other than just playing. They're not going to be in a championship hunt. Does a minor bowl game mean anything to them? No. Are there seniors that are going to be getting out of there? Most all of them have already graduated and are working on an extended degree. So that told me a lot right there. When you see your seniors, and that's essentially, they only have about 7 or 8 that are playing. That's essentially the seniors that are playing. And when you see that, and especially a Tyler Byrd, who came in his first few years looked like he was going to be a really quality slot receiver, for whatever reason has not been. He has been a huge contributor on the kicking teams ever since he's been here. Certainly had that many opportunities to leave. But you love seeing guys play like that. And again, it tells you something about the program, how your seniors play, guys that are going to be leaving next year, when they really don't have anything to play for other than pride, their team. That tells me where that program is right now. If those guys were not performing or kind of lackadaisical, but those are the leaders. All those guys led Saturday. Taylor, Jennings, Nigel Warrior, even his last few games have been good games. So that's a huge plus.
Chad brought this up earlier in the week, but the ability for Pruitt and that defense, of a system you know well, and a lot of teams run that style, you can't be a one-dimensional offense against that defense. You can have legitimate 5-star prospects and out execute with that one dimension, but 9 times out of 10, and Chad pointed this out, Pruitt's been pretty good at shutting down that dimension of the offense. They did that against Mississippi State. You've got to bring more than just the run game in order to in a game like that with two even opponents to move the football against that defense.
And I compared it to Kentucky a year ago, where they were strictly a running team, and look what Tennessee was able to held them to 7 points for the entire game.
Well, there's two things that was very key about it. First off, and this is old-time people, boy, why do you bring that up? Field position. The closest, Mississippi State had 10 drives. The closest they started to Tennessee's goal line was 72 yards away. But when you have to move the ball 72 yards, it gives the defense can be a little bit more, not careful would be the word, but they can pick up 40 yards and we're still in good shape.
That got some cushion.
That was number one. And the second thing is Tennessee's become, and I think I've talked about it almost every week on this show, I know I have on Sunday's show, they become better and better and better in the run game defense. primarily when Daniel Bettuli came back. But those defensive linemen, which, by the way, every one of those defensive linemen are going to be back next year. They don't have a single senior up front. Daryl Taylor's an outside linebacker who's playing like a lineman. But with Bettuli back, their fits are so much better, and they're playing much better run defense. And to Chad's point, if you can make a team throw, or at least not let them beat you running the ball, maybe would be a better way to play it. Make them throw, then the advantage goes to you, because three things can happen when you throw the football. They can catch it, they can hit the ground, or you can catch it. And two of those things are pretty good for you.
Do you Pruitt was joking about this week, about how he should just be the team from the high school team from Arkansas that's going to onside kick, never punt, do that kind of thing. Do you go into a game like this with that in mind? And I know that was tongue-in-cheek what he was saying, but do you pull out some rabbits out of the hat, or do you just play your game and just try to survive, to stay healthy?
You know, the coach in me, and I know when I was coaching, listen, we played some teams like this. Alabama was one of them in the early years I was at Tennessee, where there was one game one year in the rain where we didn't even get an offensive first and 10 the first half. But you always go in with believing you can win. You have to approach your team like that. But on the other hand of it, there are bigger fish to fry for this team and for this coaching staff. And I think continued improvement is large. They got to get to those. We talked last week about those last five games. After this game, they're at those last five. So I think you're going to see them play a lot of players, not anybody that shouldn't be playing, mm-hmm. but a lot of players. They are playing offensively. Alabama presents a huge problem for Tennessee, because Tennessee has not been very good at stopping inside throws in the passing game. You go back and look and just think in your mind, a lot of slants, a lot of crossing routes. Well, the greatest team I've ever watched throw slants and crossing routes, Tennessee's going to be playing. Listen, Alabama's got four guys that you can give it to them about 6 or 7 yards on a slant. If they catch that ball in full stride,
they're gone.
And Tua gets them to them, they are a handful to handle. So I don't know what he's going to do there. I really don't, because it puts so much pressure on you. So I'm assuming he's going to keep trying to get better at stopping the run. That is still key, but boy, against them, because they're gonna have those four wide receivers out there a bunch, and Tennessee man to man, I don't think can match up with at least two, if not three of them. So, but you know what, you kind of hope for a day like Georgia had, where their quarterback is maybe he's 6 inches high or a foot behind or a foot ahead. You hope for those things, but hoping and wishing ain't a good way to go. It ain't a very good game plan. I've had a couple of them, and
those don't work out.
You don't a lot of hoping and wishing good. In this game against Alabama.
An old secondary coach told me one time, and Alabama is one of these teams. You know, supposedly a post route's the hardest thing to complete, but outside breaking routes, but post routes, you know. But the good teams don't ever overthrow those post routes. They seemingly hit them in the hands every time, and they're hard to cover.
So, Daniel Bettuli, you mentioned his leadership, and he was asked about how he can help Kavarius Crouch, and he said, I'll help him because I'm going to tell him exactly what to do on every play. So, before every snap, I'm going to be telling him exactly what his assignment is when he's next to him. It's obviously going to be difficult against this Alabama offense. You talked about their ability to hit slants and crossers, but how big is Daniel Bettuli in this game to help Crouch in a spot where he's not accustomed to playing?
Well, we've seen how Tennessee has become better, at least at playing the run and lining up better when he came back. Here's a plus you don't think about, though. You know, one of the neat things is it's hard to be a defensive player at times at home because of the crowd noise. You know, you want to communicate. Well, the good thing when you're on the road is, like when you're at Alabama, that crowd's not going to be making any noise. So you can look over there next to you and say, hey, you got the A gap, you got the B back, move a little bit wider, whatever. So you don't have to be running around, look like you're grabbing, moving people around. I think that's going to help a lot. But listen, with the situation with To'o not being there for the first half, Tennessee's got three inside linebackers, period, and two of them are freshmen. Crouch and of course, To'o. So I think you're going to probably see a good bit of six defensive backs at times, because there's really nobody they can move in there. the outside linebacker type. They even had Crouch playing a lot of outside linebacker, but there's really nobody they can move in there. And I don't even know who the fourth inside linebacker would be right now. I'm assuming it'd probably be I know they work Beasley in there. Beasley, to my knowledge, hadn't played a snap at linebacker.
Came in as a safety.
You're going to put him in there against that Alabama? Maybe forced to. But Tooley's big, and he is. If you listen to Coach Pruitt talk, forget about stats. Forget about making big plays here or there, although he's made some. You can tell that his leadership and just stability in there is something that is very much appreciated and has been a big key, I think, to this defense getting better.
We talked about the inability to get a pass rush from the down linemen for Tennessee. They had 7 sacks on Saturday, and the different ways they did it, I'll quickly go through each one. They had an exotic blitz package where Bryce Thompson got a sack. They had a coverage sack where he held on for about 5 seconds. Another blitz from Bryce Thompson and a sack. Another coverage sack, 4.5 seconds the ball was held. Then you had Daryl Taylor twice get a great jump and make a play. And Kevon Bennett got a great play also where he got a jump on the guy. But the different ways they're having to generate pass rush, but something we saw there, Coach, was they got some things done with guys who were supposed to be rushing the passer every time and didn't have to blitz a few times also. And that's a big difference.
Did a better job in that, and that's going to be the quandary that Coach Pruitt's going to have, Coach Ansley's going to have in calling plays, because you just mentioned most of those sacks came when they were bringing extra pressure, an extra person, cornerback, outside linebacker, nickelback. You do that against Alabama, you're playing man against 4 guys, it's going to be very difficult to cover. And the other part of it is that, and again, I don't know what the game plan is going to be. My assumption is they won't do much blitzing, stunning at all. They'll be rushing 4. Because the other thing is Tua gets that ball out of there so quickly, and he has a really good ability of, if you're rushing and he finds a little gap, picking up key yardage. So, hey, it's a game plan that's probably not going to be what you want as a coordinator. I've been in a few of those games where you just don't have the manpower to match up, so you really hope that you get good field position. You hope you slow them down. You hope you make them earn it. You try to eliminate as many of the big plays as you can, and maybe a break will go your way. It's been proven over and over and over. The more times they snap the ball on a drive, the advantage goes to the defense. Once you get up, if you can make them run it 8 or 9 times, you're going to get maybe a holding penalty, maybe a motion penalty to get the down a distance in your favor. So you try to make them play. Jack Dempsey used to say, I want to fight one more round. That was his thing back in the heavyweight days when, they went till somebody was knocked out. As a defensive coach, you just want to make them snap the ball one more time, and then maybe we got a chance to make a play then. But that's going to be difficult.
Your show's coming up this weekend, Doug. You're going to take a long look at the 14 teams in the SEC and do a mid-season assessment.
Yeah, Saturday show, 6 games in, roughly every team in the Southeastern Conference through about halfway, at least 3 games, a couple in, 4 games in. So going to look at the 14 teams right now, where they stand. We got 5 teams right now that I think can play with anybody in the country, have proven that. Going to also look at each one of them on where they are in terms of their program rebuilding in some instances or keeping it going in other ones, but new coaches, second year, some third year, some fourth. And of course, once you've been there 5 years, you really should have your program pretty well established. And
yeah,
we're going to take a look at all those team by team Saturday morning.
How did UNLV beat Vandy this weekend?
Don't know.
How does that happen?
Well,
I know we would ask the same question about Georgia State and Tennessee.
The Jerry Tarkanian's not walking through that door anytime soon for the running Rebs.
You take a look at it, really. I mean, how does – not exactly the same. How does South Carolina go in and beat Georgia?
With a third-string quarterback.
How does North Carolina go to a two-point play to beat Clemson? It's just – those are questions, because there's clearly in all those games a gap, a pretty significant gap in overall talent. But – that's what you really coach for and play for. Is they can only put 11 out there at a time, and that's what I was mentioning a little bit earlier. If that quarterback's a little off, we see it here with the Titans.
Yes.
If your quarterback in this day and time, defenses can make you do certain things. And you have to have a quarterback that can make plays. Jake Fromm, one of the very best, in my opinion, in the country, couldn't make any plays. You know, we've had the problem here with the Titans. So that's kind of what you hope you get in one of those games where the ball's kind of bouncing your way. You get a few breaks here and there. You get it into the fourth quarter, and you have a chance to win it.
So this was not on a lot of people's radar over the weekend, but Kentucky-Arkansas, two of the worst teams in the SEC this year. Arkansas may be right there with Vandy and some others as the worst, but they put a wide receiver at quarterback and essentially ran a single wing type offense, and they're able to get a win in the SEC. I don't see how you can, talking about quarterbacks making plays, he can certainly do it with his feet, but is that something that's sustainable for Kentucky to continue to try to run an offense like that now that everyone in the league is seeing them run that offense?
No, because just what you said, everybody knows now they're going to make him throw the football, and they're going to keep him in the pocket. They're going to have their contained people, whether it be a linebacker or a defensive end in, or a defensive tackle. They're going to have him contained and keep him in there. But you just mentioned, Chad, look at it. What does Arkansas and Kentucky have in common? They got quarterback problems. South Carolina kind of had a quarterback problem. They got Helinski coming back. Tennessee's had a quarterback problem of guys making plays. And if you don't make plays, if games stay close, that's why I was mentioning, get a game into the fourth quarter, and then a block punt, somebody mishandling a punt, a big penalty, a tip pass, a ball that bounces up in the air, and you got a chance to catch it and do something with it. You get in there, and then that ball may bounce your way, but you have to have a quarterback that can make a play if you're going to win many games at all. And the ones in this league that don't, we just talked about two of them, they have a tough time. Throw Vanderbilt in there. They don't have quarterbacks to make plays.
So Florida continues to look good. Even in a loss at LSU, they continue to look good, especially on offense. And Dan Mullen certainly is a good coach. But the more this goes on with Kyle Trask, the more I'm curious how he wasn't the starter before. Because he is light years better than Felipe Franks. He is extremely accurate. He runs just enough to keep them honest in that offense. I've been very impressed with him so far. What do you think about him, and I guess that decision to go with the experience over someone who may be better if you're a coach?
Well, I think the other thing is that they had with Trask, they had that running ability.
Franks, you mean? Yeah, the running ability.
And you look at what Dan Mullen's has done really when he was a coordinator. The guys that he likes running quarterbacks, ones that can pick up key yards. But listen, Dan Mullen, for my money, it's hard to say who the best coach is. Dan Mullen could coach any place I was if I had the ability to hire him, Florida kind of semi fell into him from the standpoint of Chip Kelly had taken the Florida job, and he definitely was offered it. Dan Mullen probably would be up in Knoxville right now, would be my guess, but bottom line is he is a tremendous coach, and he develops quarterbacks, and they got talent.
Doug, thank you, as always. We enjoy the weekend shows. We'll be listening, of course, Saturday, 9 a.m., Forklift Systems Football Saturday, coach to coach at 11. Then we have the long wait for kickoff, 8 p.m. Central Time, Tennessee and Alabama. And then you'll be recapping everything without reading recaps of the game. Big R and Sunday, 8 a.m. on Sunday morning. Looking forward to it.
Recapping from my memory,
right?
After sleeping on it at the time. So thanks so much. Yep. See you all next week.
Doug Matthews, man. He's presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office.